You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Prostate cancer is the third leading cause of cancer death in American men, behind lung cancer and colorectal cancer. Now, about 1 out of 7 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during his lifetime. And prostate cancer can be a serious disease, but usually men diagnosed with it do not all die from it. In fact, 1 out of 39 men will die from prostate cancer. There are various types of prostate treatments, including surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, but one less aggressive type is hormone therapy, where treatment involves depleting the patient's testosterone levels, reducing them so that it can reduce the stimulation of the prostate cancer growth. Now, hormone therapy, also known as androgen depletion therapy, has been part of mainstream medicine for prostate cancer. But today I'm really excited to have Dr. Samuel Denmead here on Wellness for Life Radio, because he will be sharing his research on how using testosterone can help prostate cancer patients. Dr. Denmead is a professor on oncology and urology at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and he's a co-leader of the prostate cancer program for the Johns Hopkins Kimmel Cancer Center. Thanks so much for being here, Dr. Denmead.
Well, it's great to be here today to share our work with you.
Absolutely. Now, most cancer treatments deprive the body of testosterone, the hormone that men obviously have high levels of. Now, how did you find out that using testosterone can treat these prostate tumors in your study at Johns Hopkins Center?
Well, it was known for a long time that in the laboratory, if you took prostate cancer cells that had been deprived of hormone for a long time, and people tried to give back the hormone just to see if they could grow better, sometimes some of the cells actually died, and people reported on this weird paradox that these cells would die. And so I was always intrigued by that observation, and thought it would be interesting to test whether that would actually happen in patients. And I was fortunate enough to get a small grant from one of my patients who had started a foundation to raise money for prostate cancer research. And that allowed me to do a small study in about 14 patients we tested in the first group. And our thought was maybe the same effect we saw in the lab would happen in the patients. And we saw that in some patients it worked very well, actually, quite surprisingly well.
Okay, so when you noticed this in the lab, what was the percentage of the growth, reduction of the growth? What was the percentage of out of however many subjects that you had? I'm not talking about the patient, but when you did it with rats.
Well, we did it initially in just, we take cells and we grow them in a dish. And so we have a small number of cell lines, we call them, that have come from patients, you know, through the years, that we maintain in the lab, and they have different characteristics. And we know that some of them maintain their responsive growth to being having their hormone level manipulated. So we use those lines, and probably about a third of those lines we see this growth inhibition. And the growth inhibition is usually anywhere between all the cells dying to half the cells dying, depending on the experiment.
That's actually very high, Dr. Denmead. 30% of it actually regressing, as you're saying, the cells either die or reduce. But if that's the case, what's the difference between each one of those cell lines that you can find whether this type of therapy is going to work?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out. We don't know the answer to that. The same in the patients. So we see the same in the patients. About a third of the patients seem to have a really good response when we give them high dose of testosterone. And we don't exactly know what's special about those particular patients. And so that's a lot of the study we're doing, is trying to understand, are we changing certain genes? Are there certain mutations that those cells have that the other cells don't have? And we don't really know right now. We do know that it seems like this therapy is meant to work in cells that have been exposed to low testosterone for a long time. And we think what happens is on exposure to low testosterone, both in the cells and the patient, the cancer adapts to that low environment, and it makes itself susceptible to high testosterone we sort of take advantage of the cell adapting to the environment we place it in. So those cells really turn on all the machinery to really grab every molecule of testosterone that's in the body. So we find when they turn that machinery up, if we suddenly give them too much of the testosterone, they can't handle that sort of overdose, so to speak, and their response is, in some cases, to die.
Mm, that's fascinating. So, I mean, when we think about men who've had low testosterone, obviously the older they are, there are lower levels of testosterone. Or are you talking about individuals that are already pushed to the androgen depletion therapy first, and then you use it after? So this is like a timing thing.
Yeah, so it is a timing thing. We think where this works is in those patients who've been treated with androgen depletion. And most in all the studies we've done, those are the men we've treated. They are long-term on low androgen, and we think that the adaptation the cancer has made sets them up for this high androgen therapy. In those patients who've never seen that, we are concerned that if you gave those men androgen, it might actually do what it's kind of supposed to do, which would make things grow better. So we've been mostly focused on the guys who've already been on androgen depletion for a long time. The benefit of that is in terms of trying to also, besides going after the cancer, the men actually feel really good when you give them back testosterone. So these are men who have been castrated for 4 or 5 years to suddenly not be castrated. Sometimes they have, you know, a remarkable good response to that.
And then with this grant, I mean, the grant you had 14 subjects, and of those 14, 30% of them improved. Is that correct? I think that's what the number you just said.
Yeah, so what we saw was, you know, in prostate cancer, we used the blood marker PSA. We saw in about half of the men, the blood marker went down, and in a third of the men, the blood marker went down a lot, so we counted those guys as our responders. And about half the men, we also saw some shrinkage of the tumor to varying degrees, ranging from completely gone to partially gone. So, you know, that's not 100%, but in the sort of realm of this kind of therapy, that was actually surprising one and actually pretty good given what we were doing to them.
Oh, absolutely. To me, that's like a huge difference. If you're saying that you're shrinking it, number one, and because most prostate cancer, as we know, is a slow growing, it could be years. And like I said in the earlier, when I was introducing you, prostate cancer, most men don't die from it. So if we can control it, shrink it, and as you say, even completely eliminate it, you know, that's awesome. And it's, this is a promising therapy to me.
Yeah, and I must say some of the other men, you know, in the men that did not have, you know, discrete decrease in size of their cancer or the PSA level, a lot of those men had a long time where the tumor just didn't grow. It just kind of sat there in a stable state. So, you know, that may also be important, even though we don't shrink the tumor necessarily. We potentially can prolong life, hopefully, if the thing never grows. So we saw that, too, as an effect. That's harder to quantify, but surprisingly, we did not see a lot of men get much worse. That was the fear. And when we first started that initial study, we were very nervous that, you know, we didn't want to make things worse. And so we proceeded very cautiously at first. You know, we selected the right men and small tumors, and we were, you know, very careful. But we've been surprised that the one thing we didn't see so far is really making things much worse.
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the reasons I'm sure why the hormone therapy for so long has been to, as you use the word, castrate the men, is completely get rid of that one hormone that makes men who they are. And
right. You know, not to denigrate that therapy, you know, hormone suppression is probably the best treatment we have for any cancer. So it works extremely well. But there's a price to pay in terms of the quality of life of the patient, and it doesn't cure the patient. And so we're trying to think of ways to we think it's a very good therapy, but there's got to be ways we can work with that as part of the treatment, but also doing other treatments.
Right.
That's been the focus. So, I mean, my fantasy would be we could go low testosterone, high testosterone, low, you know, through the person's life, up and down, and, you know, keep the cancer under control that way. We'd enhance quality of life and, you know, hopefully enhance the length of life.
Mm. And have you done those studies? I mean, you just talked about cycling low and high, low and high. With the study that you have worked with, is that what you're doing now as a maintenance therapy?
Well, we did a small study of that, and we, you know, again, it's certainly too small, other than to show that we could do it and it was safe. We couldn't really make big conclusions. Right now, we have two studies going on, and we're really looking at the question of how well does this work. You know, we need bigger numbers of patients to be convinced our first study wasn't just kind of luck. And so we have two large studies, and one of the studies is comparing testosterone to the one of the main drugs we use to block testosterone. So it's opposite, so to speak. So the patients either get high-dose testosterone or they get this anti-testosterone drug, and we're trying to see which works better. The other thing we've seen with the cycling component is when we give testosterone for a long time, the cells readapt to this new environment, and they seem to become susceptible again to low testosterone. So many of the men, when the disease seems to start to get worse on the testosterone, will re-respond, sometimes to the same drug that didn't work at the beginning, to that drug again. And our thought would be then to try another cycle. We haven't really done that, only in a few patients. And we have seen in some patients we can do this multiple times. But right now we're looking at kind of, can we resensitize the patient to a drug that wasn't working? Can we make it work again? And so far, it looks like we could do it in some patients. So there's almost two aspects to it, the treatment of the testosterone itself and then the resensitization to regular hormone drugs again.
Can we talk a little bit about what testosterone, how it actually converts into DHT? The reason why I'm asking is this, because we talk about testosterone, but does DHT have anything to do with it?
Well, in the human body, testosterone is the main, it's called an androgen, which classifies all male hormones compared to estrogens, which is female hormones. And in the body, in the prostate tissue, there's an enzyme that can turn testosterone into dihydrotestosterone, and that androgen is about 10 times more potent than testosterone. And in the laboratory, when we treat cells that are sensitive, they seem to be sensitive to testosterone or dihydrotestosterone, really any androgen. We looked at a whole panel. So it's probably not that important. However, there are some scientific studies that suggest there may be different effects of testosterone or dihydrotestosterone on the cancer cell. And one of the things we're exploring in the lab is, could we use a drug to block testosterone being converted to dihydrotestosterone, and would that work better? And those drugs are the drugs we use to treat other prostate diseases. They're called finasteride, dutasteride. These are common drugs men use to treat their prostate when it gets too big. So those drugs are available. We potentially could combine them with the testosterone. And that's kind of where we're looking to go in the future, maybe.
I know that saw palmetto, it's a natural herbal remedy, well known to be used for prostatitis. Have you ever used that rather than using a drug?
Well, there was a time where that was very popular. A lot of my patients will take various herbal preparations and things. I must say with saw palmetto, there was a lot of that being used by my patients, and I personally did not see any real big effects on the cancer manifesting as PSA going down or anything like that. I have seen occasionally men will take various herbal preparations, and we do see changes in the PSA. Some of those herbal preparations have compounds in them, I think, that are estrogen-like. They're called phytoestrogens, plant-like estrogens. And phytoestrogens and estrogens, if you give a man estrogen, it's a way to turn off testosterone. So it's possible that some of the plant preparations can work by slightly lowering the testosterone level, and that would slightly inhibit the growth of prostate tissue that's never seen low testosterone before. So I think there's a potential for them to work in some patients. But in the cancer realm, we have not seen really big effects with those kind of compounds.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean, because when you go online, there's so much information out there. And often, I treat all forms of different type of clinical nutrition issues and people who've got inflammation in their body. And sometimes I do see patients coming in, although I'm not a cancer patient, cancer doctor, they have cancer. They've been working with a cancer doctor, they've worked with a prostate. And so they're trying everything, obviously, whether it's their diet, alkalizing their diet, nutrients, just like like you're talking about. But I'm actually really interested in the fact that the way you're manipulating the testosterone level, whether it's low or high, and in your case, you want to use it to and pulse it so that we can the cancer can shrink and, as you say, reduce prostate the PSA level. Is it always correlated, the PSA, with the growth of the prostate cancer?
I think in a crude way. I mean, I think we all use the PSA level as a kind of a yardstick of whether a treatment's working or not. And it in some ways reflects how much cancer is there. It's a little tricky when you apply the PSA to hormone therapy, though, because PSA is a hormone-sensitive gene. So we were worried when we started this treatment with testosterone that even if it worked on the cancer, we wouldn't see it because the PSA level would be stimulated to go very high. And we do see that in some patients. We give them the testosterone and we get a 10-fold increase in their PSA. It's very scary. But in other patients, that doesn't happen. We don't know why. The PSA level drops. So the PSA level is a good marker to follow treatment. It's not perfect, but lacking anything else, it's good. But for these hormone treatments, both low and high hormones, it's a little bit tricky because you could potentially change how much PSA the tumor makes without actually changing the tumor itself. So we have to be a little bit cautious the way we interpret the levels.
Mm. What is free PSA? I know, you know, on any lab you'll see PSA, which is the total. But talk about a little bit about free PSA and how you use that as a marker as well.
So PSA is an enzyme, and the way it works, it's a protease. So it's a kind of enzyme that cuts proteins into little pieces. So when you eat a steak, you have proteases in your stomach that cut up the meat, the protein. PSA does that in the prostate. We're not exactly sure what it's cutting up, but that's what it does. And when it gets into the blood, PSA, because you don't want to have things chewing things up in the blood, PSA gets stuck to things in the blood. Some of the PSA is produced and it's not active, so it's not bound to anything. It's free. And so we can measure that. And we think that the ratio of what's bound to what's free is different in prostate cancer versus benign conditions. So where we mostly use that is when a man walks in the door and his PSA is a little bit high, but not real high, and we're not sure if he has cancer or benign problem. Sometimes that's helpful to kind of make us make the best guess, you know, which way to go. That's mostly where it's useful. Once you have cancer and it's advanced, the free PSA itself is not that helpful.
I see. So then with a free PSA, is it better to have higher levels or lower levels?
It is better to have lower levels.
Lower levels of the free PSA. Okay, got it. So then you mentioned earlier
your listener should fact check that because I always get it backwards. So I think it's lower levels. Without looking it up right now, I think it's lower levels.
Okay, good. Thank you, Dr. So there's, you know, you mentioned earlier about how testosterone obviously is in a lot of men as we get older, just naturally have lower testosterone, and some of the signs of that is muscle wasting and neurological, meaning cognitive function, just an overall general where they don't feel good. But then when you started the testosterone, you also saw that there were really positive effects. Can you give some of those positive effects? How did they change, at least some of the patients that you
used? The most obvious effect was those men who, you know, after the treatment for prostate cancer, unfortunately, a lot of men lose their ability to have, you know, sexual potency. And so the surgery, the radiation can affect that. But in those men that they were still able to have sexual potency, when you castrate them, they lose that, and they can't have sex anymore. So the most obvious benefit was many of the men now could have sex again. They had their libido return, their hot flashes went away, all those sexual effects from low hormone. And that those men really were happy. I must say some of the men are in their 80s, and they're happy, but they're really not sure what to do about that. But the other effects tend to be more just general fun, sort of energy level, functional level, feeling like they can do more things. And again, we had men take on new kind of projects. One of my patients put in a hardwood floor. Another guy built a gazebo in his backyard. So men that were feeling just kind of, but I tell my patients hormone therapy is probably going to make you feel your age, maybe plus 5 years. So it's going to make you feel even older than you are. So a lot of men, the big benefits were in those kind of areas, just feeling more vitality, I guess. We also see effects on some things in the body. So hormone therapy gives people anemia. Their blood counts drop, 5-6 points. The testosterone brings that back up to normal. Some of the abnormalities with their blood sugars get better. Many of the men, if they stay on it long enough, they start to have, they get more lean mass, and they can lose fat. So overall, good things can happen. It didn't happen for everybody. Some men actually felt a little bit weird and jittery because, the way we're doing this treatment is we pulse them. They get a real high level of testosterone that then drops. So they go from high to low over a month, and some of the men just felt weird, But most of the men, overall, I think, felt good. And sometimes we have patients sort of begging us not to come off the treatment even when it stops working, which is unusual for me as a cancer doctor. Usually it's the other way around; they just can't wait to stop the treatment.
Yes,
so
of course.
That's been very satisfying as a doctor to give them something that can make them feel good.
Oh, absolutely. The way you were describing the high and low, I'll tell you, doctor, that's what women go through when we go through the menstrual cycle.
I know. I was surprised it wasn't more of a problem. That I thought at the beginning when we designed this, that there would be kind of an emotional wreck going from, these big swings. But only a few men had problems with that. Most of the men don't seem to be bothered that much by it.
Oh, that's good. Now, you did, I understand that one of your patients actually got completely prostate curing from this testosterone treatment. Is that correct?
Well, in oncology, cure is a very, very big word and a very charged word. So
yes.
We have one of the patients who now, it's about 2 years he's been on the treatment. He has no signs of cancer. His PSA level is zero. And the cancer that he had, that we could see on scans is all gone. So we're not sure if he's cured, but it's certainly what cure would look like. He has normal testosterone level and no cancer. So it's scary because when we use that word, I must tell you, I've gotten about 1,000 emails since that little story got published that we've talked about, because everybody's looking for a cure. He is an extreme kind of outlier. We didn't see that in anybody else. We did see other patients have respond for a long time. But he is the most extreme, and we're really working hard to try to figure out that one man. Why did he have such a great effect? And we're looking at different aspects of his. Does he have certain mutation that's going on? What about him that's special? But we did have that one patient, and we've also had we've had one patient like that. We've had other patients, like I said, who get a long effect, but not that dramatic.
Now, you're a clinician. You have patients. You're mainly on with prostate oncology. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'm at Johns Hopkins. I have both a laboratory that I do, new drug development for prostate cancer, and I'm a clinician, and I mostly focus on prostate cancer in the clinic. All my clinical research is prostate cancer.
So then the work you've done with the testosterone therapy, improving, increase and decreasing it, those are cases where they haven't had any surgery or any radiation. Isn't that correct?
No, these are men that have had, all the men have had some kind of usually local therapy that has failed along the way, and their cancer comes back. And these are men who have metastases, in the bone, the liver, the lymph nodes. And they're men that have been treated for some period of time with hormonal therapy, and then that hormonal therapy starts to fail. So those are the men we've been treating on the trials that we're doing.
Oh,
so
wow, that's good to know.
It's more advanced cancer than surgery, radiation are incredibly good at curing the disease. We forget that most cancer in America we cure. Everybody has, we all feel, very depressed about cancer, but the good news is we cure most prostate cancer, we cure most breast cancer, we cure most everything, and we cure it mostly with surgery or radiation. So, you have to go through those kind of procedures, but we still can cure the disease. And so I've gotten a lot of letters from folks wanting to do testosterone as an alternative to surgery and radiation, and I would say, no, those treatments will cure the disease. And, I can't say that really about testosterone, certainly that early. So I want to emphasize that this is definitely not an alternative to those things.
I'm glad that you emphasize that because my thoughts are, this is happening for individuals who are more resistant to those mainstream, then
yes,
maybe
exactly
you
right.
never know. I mean, ultimately, I look at, wow, it's so promising that if it is as helpful in those individuals who have more resistant and they're stubborn with getting rid of it, then maybe testosterone treatment would help someone who's in the early stages. I'm just kind of putting it out there. And
yeah, I think that's certainly something we want to study down the road. We just don't know. We do know that as men get older, their testosterone level, as you mentioned, drops. And whether that somehow is promoting of cancer, because, you know, that seems to promote in the prostate more inflammation, which is, you know, can be associated with cancer in other places when we have inflammation. So we're not really sure on that. And whether brought the testosterone level up, there's a lot of controversy about giving men testosterone replacement who have low testosterone. And there was a worry for a long time that it can cause prostate cancer, which I don't think is true based on a lot of studies that were done. So it doesn't seem like that effect happens. Now, whether it prevents prostate cancer, I don't think anybody's really looked at that yet to know.
Well, so exciting still. Everything that you're talking about is just great information. You know, thank you so much for being here on Wellness for Life. I put a link on my Wellness for Life radio show page on Radio MD regarding all of Dr. Samuel's work. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. My life mission is to help you be your very best version of you today. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Thank you.